Not just the up-down of the chest, but the actual breath, as if they were outdoors in winter. He wanted to capture the breath in a jar and carry it with him, uncap the lid during times of crisis, and inhale her essence. He couldn't force himself to touch her, was afraid to move beyond the doorframe, and the nurse said she understood. It's very difficult to lose a loved one. Hunter nodded, said, "Please don't leave me." And the nurse, thinking he was talking to Kate, left. He was the one who had to break the news to everyone. He hadn't even told anyone she was feeling sick, his mild form of protest against the tyranny of her family's constant feed of updates via every network imaginable. Phones, Twitter, Facebook, photo-sharing websites, emails, text messages, especially text messages, every time anything allegedly noteworthy happened to anyone in the Dixon family, the definition of noteworthy being broad enough to include updates on a nephew's suspension from school and a cousin's recent battle with indigestion, so that every day demanded the filtering of reams of unnecessary information, which is why, when Kate wanted to call her brother to complain about her stomach pains, Hunter said, "Let's just wait. There's no need to tell everyone everything all the time." Not that their knowing about it would likely have changed the end result. But maybe. He knew the first call should be to Kate's mother, Sherry, but didn't think he could endure that agonizing conversation, and was afraid that when he told her brothers, they would blame him and want to fight him, and so the first person he called upon learning that his wife was dead was Linda, one of Kate's co-workers at the bank, a casual acquaintance who nonetheless howled with grief, weeping so fiercely that Hunter's phone became waterlogged with her tears. He made 12 phone calls before contacting anyone in the family, by which point he was already so numb from having repeated the story that he was doing it by rote and expected to be able to break hearts without any hesitation. And yet, when he heard Sherry wailing on the other end of the line, he lost his voice, couldn't answer any of her questions, and passed the phone off to a nearby nurse. The official cause of death was listed as massive internal bleeding caused by a ruptured fallopian tube, the result of an ectopic pregnancy, a condition fraught with this reality. They had conceived a child together, and that child had killed her. Or more accurately, Hunter himself was the murder weapon, the one who had implanted the destructive thing inside her. If he had mixed anthrax into her oatmeal, he would be in prison, but now people are commiserating with him, as if he had nothing to do with it, as if it wasn't his fault. They are all at his house. Her extended family, not his. He has no family beyond his parents. By the time he returns from the hospital, the brothers lining up empty beer cans on the windowsill in the kitchen. Sherry flopped face down on the couch, a nephew, obsessed with death like so many little boys, running aimlessly around the kitchen table, firing imaginary pistols at everyone. Brutus, the oldest brother, grabs Hunter roughly by the shoulders and engulfs him in a bear hug. Billy, the middle brother, pats Hunter on the back while this is happening. Brutus releases Hunter and wipes a tear off his cheek. "It's okay to cry," he says, perhaps to himself. He digs into a cooler and tosses Hunter a can of Bud, which Hunter opens and holds in his lap for the next 3 hours, sitting on the floor in front of the couch while the brothers tell the same stories about Kate that they've told on every holiday and at every family gathering before this, a litany of palliative anecdotes so familiar they could all fill in the details without even listening. When she and her friends in 6th grade had been picked up by the cops for throwing rocks through a rival girl's bedroom window. When Billy, the middle brother, had paid a friend.